Hello, listeners. Today we have a special bonus episode for you. We tried something a little different, so we hope you give it a listen. It is parking related, as it pertains to the most famous parking ticket ever issued. So let us know what you think. Enjoy. This episode contains descriptions of violence. Listener discretion is advised. It's 1977 in New York City. Trains littered with graffiti rattle through the night. The city is bankrupt, trash litters the streets, violence and drugs are destroying families. And to top it off, a serial killer calling himself the Son of Sam is terrorizing the city, shooting victims at random, and leaving letters mocking police.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer who has come to be known as the Son of Sam, the object of one of the biggest manhunts in this city's history. In the past year, the killer, believed to be a young man, has killed 5 people and wounded 4. His victims, mostly young women with shoulder-length dark hair, usually shot at very close range while sitting in parked cars at night. They've been shot with a .44 caliber bulldog revolver, an especially deadly weapon.
This would lead to the biggest manhunt in the history of New York City, causing pandemonium in the city, leading to worldwide notoriety.
Struck again over the weekend, shooting a young couple in a Brooklyn lover's lane, and today the girl died. The killer's 6th victim. He's wounded 7 others.
Retired New York City police officer Mike Cataneo sat down with us to discuss what it was like to be a police officer in the 70s during the Son of Sam killing spree.
What it was back in the 70s, every precinct in the city as a whole had a lot of homicides, and they started adding up. And then, the detectives start putting one piece together who was shot in this borough, that the borough, and it turned out ballistically it was the same weapon. They say someone's out there killing people, and then naturally the bell rings. Hey, we got a serial killer on our hands, because he struck in Queens first and then Manhattan, and the last place he struck was in Brooklyn.
But Mike was more than just a New York City police officer in the 70s. Mike Catney and his partner Jeff Logan were working their beat one night when they noticed some cars illegally parked. Little did they know that one of the parking tickets issued by Mike to yellow Ford Galaxy parked in front of a fire hydrant would end up being the missing link used to solve the case of the Son of Sam killer. We asked Mike Cataneo, who's now living in North Carolina, to take us back to July 31st, 1977, when Mike and Jeff were walking their beat that one fateful night.
And he struck in the wee hours, a beautiful, I believe it was July 30th, beautiful summer night, big full moon. And, most cops today, I'll tell you, it's a full moon. Get ready. It's going to be busy. And it was. Yeah, what had happened was I had a partner who was getting ready to retire. He was on vacation. I had this filling guy with me, Jeffrey Logan, great guy. He just passed away sometime this winter, rest his soul. We're riding around, and every cop in every borough was looking for this guy. And it was in the newspaper, and he was taunting the newspaper and sending them letters. Of course, the mayor was under pressure from up above, and he was putting pressure on the police commission. You know how that goes. Everybody's looking for this guy. And it was funny, somewhere by all these different interviews in all these different boroughs, they were looking for a Ford, a certain model Ford. And then they said, maybe it's a Volkswagen. They didn't know what he had. You know what I mean? It was crazy. But this particular night, Jeff Logan and I were patrolling down this section of roadway, which is right next to the Belt Parkway, a highway. And there's a couple of kids sitting there, they're talking. We pull up to them and say, hey, listen, don't you guys read the newspaper? And there's a guy running around in the city killing kids. What are you doing here? Get lost. And one kid goes, oh, they'll never come to Brooklyn. I said, get this thing started and get out of here. Before I start checking you out, maybe I can give you a ticket or something. That was enough. And he left. Who knew? We probably saved their lives. I don't know. Because we chased them, and we drove away, and I don't think it was just a couple of minutes later, we got a call, a reporter shots fired. I said, we just left that place like 5-6 minutes, a few minutes. Another couple rolled up, sit there, and this guy, I feel to this day that Berkowitz, the guy who eventually got caught, there was a playground there. I still feel to this day he was in that playground watching us. We couldn't see him. Because we no sooner drove away, another car pulled up, and boom, he ran out and shot these 2 kids. So, we were that close, but you never know, what I mean? And Jeff Logan, I remember, I didn't know him that well, and he said, this guy's going to get caught by two uniformed cops. He's going to make a mistake. Lo and behold, who knew? You know, it was us. Because just before that happened, at the beginning of the shift, because this all went down like 2:30 in the morning or something like that, we're going up the side street, and it was all little after midnight. It's all these double parked cars. And, you know, we're not ticket crazy. I said, you know, if someone's having a party, just leave them alone. But we went back like an hour and a half later, and then there's a couple of cars on the hydrant. So we said, well, let these guys are here. A lot of times in Brooklyn, tough to park. People think nothing of parking a car on a hydrant and going to bed. So we tagged those two hydrants, and one of them turned out to be the car that this guy was riding around in. We drove by, and we did what we had to do. We chased those kids, and now we got the shooting. We go up there, and there's these two kids laying there. One with the girl was in the car, with Stacy Moskowitz, and the guy she was dating that night, he was halfway in the car, half out laying, and we could tell that they were really seriously, seriously injured. So, you know, we called for backup, we called for ambulance, and of course, as soon as you call the shots fired, the kids, unbeknownst to us, the city had their own routine. They put it out citywide. There was a shooting, and then everybody and his brother from all over started responding. And we had a car that had to be vouched, and I had two kids and an ambulance, and my partner rolled in one, and I had to escort the ambulances. And then the city of New York had the detectives and all these big shot people running the police department had a protocol in place. They put over a particular code over the radio that went citywide, and everybody responded to that location. And where we were, they closed the highway down. And we got two kids severely injured, both shot. And we're trying to get to the local hospital, which was Coney Island Hospital in them days. We had a hard time getting through because the police at another end of the highway and were closing the highway down, looking for information, maybe trying to pull over a car to catch this guy. But when we finally got to the hospital, and then they just triaged them and shipped them right out to another hospital further out in Brooklyn, Kings County. Very busy, but they had, at them days, a very good specialized unit for treating head wounds and, you know, injuries. And that's where this girl, Stacy Moskowitz, eventually passed away. And her boyfriend, he survived. He's still alive today. He's legally blind, but he's, you know, he's around. Slowly but surely, information was pulling in. And eventually, they traced one of those summonses that we wrote to this guy's car, and they went and found him. It was a great feeling, you know, but the poor girl, she passed away. It was tough.
Stacy Moskowitz, a pretty 20-year-old blonde, became the sixth to die in the killer's string of attacks.
Now, here's the thing. I don't know, it's many years since I'm out, but back then, and I'm sure it's just still around in every city, every state, when a major crime goes down, a holdup of robberies or some homicide, no matter what it was, one of the standard operating procedures is they look in that area what happened, what the police personnel were in that area, whatever, wherever was that. Did anyone pull someone over prior to or just before and give them a citation, a summons for a traffic light or something? Did anybody hang a ticket on somebody's car? That was normal operating procedure. Now, I don't know what happened with the NYPD. I don't think that was checked right away. I think when the detectives went around canvassing everybody, this lady who was living in the apartment said she saw a strange-looking guy. He looked kind of weird, blah, blah. He may not have a gun. Oh, by the way, I saw a cop put a ticket on his car. But she broke the case.
Cecilia Davis was walking her dog at the scene of the Moskowitz shooting when she saw Officer Mike Cataneo ticketing a car that was parked in front of the fire hydrant. Moments after Cataneo and Logan had left, a young man walked past her from the area of the car, and he seemed to study her with some interest. Davis felt concerned because he was wielding in his hand some kind of dark object, as she put it. She ran to her home only to hear a few shots fired behind her in the street. Davis remained silent about the experience for 4 days until she finally contacted police, who closely checked every car that had been ticketed in the area that night.
Floyd Calber, the news of the arrest of suspect David Berkowitz.
Jane, the man's name is David Berkowitz. He is an unmarried 24-year-old postal worker. He's a veteran of Korean service with the United States Army. When he was arrested late last night in his apartment in Yonkers, New York, he told the officers, "Okay, you've got me." David Berkowitz is expected to be booked, as Jane mentioned, in Brooklyn this morning and formally accused of committing at least one of six murders in the New York area in just the past year. Specifically, they expect him to be booked for the murder of 20-year-old Stacy Moskowitz on July the 31st. In the end, a parking ticket proved to be the undoing for Berkowitz.
And like that, the parking ticket took on a life of its own.
My summons was on the front page of the Daily News. And I remember because it was the day when Groucho Marx died. This picture was in there, too. And there's my summons, and I never scribbled my name. You could read my name plain as day.
In the end, it was something as simple as this $25 parking ticket that led police to Berkowitz. Police had ticketed his car for parking too close to this fire hydrant, a block and a half from the most recent killing, on the same night as the killing, July 31st. A routine follow-up of the ticket led police to Berkowitz's car, parked in front of his Yonkers, New York apartment. And when police discovered the machine gun and a letter in the car, 15 detectives staked out the apartment and car.
But I said to all these bosses, you know, I could have wrote it, or this guy sitting next to me could have wrote it. Just remember that. Either one of us could have done it. What happened was, my father was still alive, he was old. And he called me up like 3 o'clock in the morning. Some news media was trying to find me, and somehow he called my father. I didn't know the case had broke yet. And then I said, oh, my God, this case got broke. They said you had something to do with it. I said, okay. I had to do a day shift the next day at the station house. I walked in. There was a message from the police commissioner's office that me and Jeff Logan ought to talk to nobody, get in a radio car, and report to police headquarters for a special thing. So we got up there, and I said to Jeff Logan, I said, oh, look at this. We're involved. One of us wrote a ticket that got him. I said, oh, good. We were locked in a room and told to talk to nobody. It was, 9 o'clock in the morning. The mayor come walking by and the police commissioner, and they all red-nosed and happy, and, you know, everybody was happy.
New York began feeling relief at 1:30 this morning when Mayor Beam announced the arrest.
I'm very pleased to announce that the people of the city of New York can rest easy this morning because of the fact that the police have captured a man whom they believe to be the Son of Sam.
And it wasn't just the New York City Police Department and administration that was happy. Mike's parking ticket struck a chord with many people around the world that do the little things that often go unnoticed.
I started getting all kinds of mail, and a lot of people don't know where I live. So they would mail a letter to the police department headquarters, and then it would get forwarded to me. I got letters from cops all over this country. You name it. You know, in New York City, they're captains and lieutenants. Another place, they're corporals and majors. You know what I'm saying? I got police department in California, Chicago, Illinois, all over. And I got one in particular, and I have all these. I'm getting old. I moved. Some of the stuff got moved away. I saved a lot, but I can't find it, you know. But I got this one letter from some young police officer in a little town in New Jersey. And evidently, he may be quick with the pen. Who knows? You know what I mean? In some of these little towns, everybody knows everybody. Evidently, he must have wrote a ticket or two and stepped on a few toes. He wrote me this letter that how he was more or less, he was more or less in the doghouse, and they treated him like dirt. And now he reads about me, and he's got all this encouragement. Really nice letter. You know, I answered him back. You know, just listen. You know, just you just got to use a little temperament and use a little, have a little compassion for people. You know, and sometimes you have no choice. You got to do what you have to do. That comes with the territory. And then I got a videotape back in the days, an audio tape, a little cassette tape from a minister down in the Texas, right on the Gulf of Mexico. I believe the name was something like Muzan Big, something like that. And he was preaching a sermon. And part of that sermon was City New York, and this man, what he was saying is anybody but anybody at any given time is there and called upon to do something you don't know about until it happens. In other words, anybody could do something great in their life. I called this guy up and thanked him. He said, oh, my God, you called me. I said, yeah. I had to hunt him down and get his phone number. I tell you what, Isaiah, I got letters from guys in the military service. I got letters from Germany. I got letters from France. I just was totally, oh, my God, when is this going to end? All these, and some of these people, such beautiful stuff they wrote, you know. Goes to show we're all human, we're all in the same boat, you know what I'm saying?
Many police officers and detectives received promotions due to the capture of David Berkowitz, including Mike Cataneo himself. But while Mike was happy for the promotion, he felt guilt that his partner Jeff Logan wasn't equally recognized for his involvement in the capture. Mike also had remorse for the families that had loved ones killed by the Son of Sam killer.
The sad thing is, I said something at the ceremony at police headquarters, and everybody's interviewing everybody. And I said, look, it's a wonderful feeling to have a part of it, to be involved, no matter how minute, take a person like this off the street, and to give some of the victims' families a little closure. You know, it's tough. And you can't bring these people back. And who wants to lose a son or a daughter or a niece or nephew for no reason?
But he does recognize that by issuing that parking ticket that night, Catnago and Logan both undisputedly saved lives.
When the detectives tracked him down, and Jeff Logan did say, you know, this guy's going to come from some out-of-the-way place, and he exactly where Berkowitz lived, to get the name of the area he used to live in. But when they tracked him down and they were sitting on his car, when he went to get in his car, they grabbed him. He had a gunny sack or something in his car with an automatic weapon and a lot of ammo. And he supposedly said that he was going to go to a nightclub in Long Island and just start shooting at, you know, a Friday or a Saturday night. So it could have been a lot worse.
They found hundreds of rounds of ammunition and two more guns, including a .45 caliber machine gun detectives said Berkowitz planned to use in his next attack, which they said was planned for a Long Island discotheque.
Mike even has a memento of his parking ticket heard around the world.
A couple of the cops I worked with on the midnight shift in the 6-2 precinct, they said, Mikey, give me the keys to your car. What's what? Don't ask no questions. Just give me the keys to your car. You know, they're pranksters. Yeah, okay, you know. You got to have some cop humor. So I forget all about it. I'm going home the next day. I drive over the Verrazano Bridge, go to Staten Island. And, you know, traffic is crazy. The guy cuts me off. I hit the brake. And I feel, boom. I said, oh, my God. I thought I got rear-ended. I get out of the car. I don't see nothing. So, okay. I get home. Wait a minute. What are those guys doing? I open a trunk, and there's a hydrant in my trunk. Sat in my backyard. Just sat there in a spot on Staten Island. And when I moved to North Carolina, well, I had a daughter down there, and I visited her all the time. And long story, I moved right behind her. I took that hydrant with me. When the guy's moving in the moving van, they say, what's this nutty guy doing with a hydrant? Yeah, they don't know who I am. I made a little spot for it in my backyard. It's cemented in. It can't fall down. And every couple of years, I repaint it black and silver, and that's my memento.
David Berkowitz is currently serving 6 consecutive life sentences in a maximum security prison. He reportedly converted to Christianity, has expressed remorse, and has refused his parole hearings, requesting to remain in prison for the rest of his life. However, many families and friends of the victims of his killing spree still struggle to come to grips with the violence he carried out. Jeff Logan passed away this winter. Mike Cataneo agreed to this interview but asked that Jeff Logan be acknowledged for his part in the parking enforcement efforts that led to the capture of Berkowitz. Mike Cataneo currently lives in North Carolina and enjoys spending time with his 10 grandchildren. We at the Parking Podcast are very thankful for his time and energy helping tell his story. Millions of parking tickets are issued each year by thousands of parking enforcement officers all over the world. These officers are often yelled at, laughed at, bullied, and even assaulted on occasion. Most of them are doing the right thing day in and day out, making our streets and downtown safer, generating turnover, improving traffic through elimination of cruising and double parked vehicles, and bringing in much needed revenue for downtowns to put back into their community. Hopefully this July 31st, on the 42nd anniversary of one officer issuing a parking ticket that ended up saving lives and ridding a city of anxiety, you take the time to thank that parking enforcement officer that shows up every day doing the little things to make your community and parking program better. To our listeners, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Parking Podcast. Please leave us a review and tell a friend about our show. It would mean a lot. This has been a production of Synchronicity Media, produced by me, Isaiah Mao. Our music and score is by Zona. Our show art and design is by the talented Allison Gilly. You can follow us on social media at The Parking Podcast, or you can find our website with bonus content at parkingcast.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.